So this is the last class on multiculturalism and diversity. Now, of course, I've had to simplify the question a lot because it's an enormous question because there's also the question of Scottish identity, Irish identity, and perhaps you know that the development of Scottish identity has been enormous in the last 25 years. Yeah. 25 years ago, there was no parliament in Scotland. Everything was decided in London. And now there is a parliament in Edinburgh, and they had a referendum 3 years ago where the independents nearly won. Okay, they lost, but they got, you know, like 46 or something percent, which would have been considered absolutely impossible 30 years ago. 30 or 40 years ago, everybody thought, Scottish independence, that's a ridiculous idea. And then they got, 45% or something in the referendum. So all of those things are changing. But multiculturalism, we normally think mostly of post-colonial migration from the Caribbean, from India, from Pakistan, and so on. But there are questions of culture in Scotland. For example, the role of the Scottish language, the Gaelic language. For example, but I don't know if you know, but in Scotland they have a different legal system from England. In England, if you are accused of murder, I'm sure you're not, then it's like in France. They decide guilty or not guilty. In Scotland, it doesn't work like that. In Scotland, if you are in the court for murder, they decide guilty, not guilty, or not proven. Huh? I think it's the only legal system in Europe which works like that. Yeah, guilty, not guilty, or not proven. It's a different way. In any case, so to go back to this general question of what is multiculturalism, somebody gave this definition. Because it's always been very difficult to define multiculturalism, because it's very difficult to define culture. If somebody who lives in Hoa and their parents come from China, and somebody else lives in Hoa and their parents come from Italy, do they have different cultures? Well, maybe, but they might both of them eat the same stuff and listen to the same music and go to the same school and do the same job. So it's like the culture is very difficult to define. So this is it's one intellectual who gave this definition. Multiculturalism in the modern world, so that's an interesting idea, perhaps it was different in the traditional world, involves on the one hand the acceptance of a single culture and a single set of individual rights governing the public domain, and a variety of folk cultures in the private, domestic, and communal domains. Now, I'm not saying that this is the true definition of multiculturalism. This is this man's definition of multiculturalism. And you can see that here you have an idea of a difference between the public domain and the private, domestic, and communal domain. The idea that you... you have some of this, some examples of this in Britain. For example, in Britain, if you are, in the Jewish community that you just saw, they have Jewish courts, Jewish tribunals. Now, of course, so if you have a conflict with another member of the community, there is a Jewish tribunal who can decide. In particular about questions of inheritance or questions of divorce. Now, of course, any individual can choose. They can go to the community, to the Jewish tribunal if they wish, or they can go to the public tribunal. And it's the same in the Muslim community in Britain. There are Islamic courts, especially for questions of problems within the family and so on. And they decide things. And there are, as well, in addition to the public courts. Now, my impression is that this does not exist in France. I think it's a kind of multiculturalist idea. But there is sometimes even cooperation. So if you go to a public tribunal, a magistrate, the magistrate might say, "Oh, why don't you go to the why don't you go to the Jewish tribunal? I think it'd be a good idea." Huh? Which obviously this is something which is very, very British. So this is the idea, and the acceptance of a single culture and a single set of individual rights. And of course you get conflicts here you get conflicts because people have a different idea of what is a single culture. So, for example, if you work in France as a teacher or in Turkey as a teacher, you cannot wear a hijab when you're working. That's impossible. In France, it's impossible. In Turkey, in Britain, it's not a problem. It's just you wear what you know. It's just it's not even a controversy. So those are two different ideas of what does that mean, accepting a single culture. Yeah, so those are ongoing discussions, and everybody has their own idea. Of course, especially in France, this is like si vous voulez bien vous amuser lors d'un repas de Noël avec la famille étendue, vous savez qu'à lancer une discussion sur le foulard musulman, tout le monde va s'amuser à fond, quoi. It's very special in France. It's very special in France. Yeah, so this is John Rex. That's not so important. Yeah, the concept of a multicultural society. Here is another definition. Or another comment on multicultural society. This is Kenan Malik. The idea of a plural or multicultural society is a deeply ambiguous one. The concept of multiculturalism overestimates the homogeneity and autonomy of the various ethnic groups and underestimates the degree to which all groups are reciprocally implicated in the creation of cultural forms within a common framework. So he's saying that multiculturalism is a problem because it's simplistic. It simplifies the situation too much. You have a Jewish culture, you have a Muslim culture, you have a... But in fact, it doesn't really work like that. That's what he's saying. It's more mixed in there. Yeah. And it within folk discussions, people often talk about when people from two different cultures get married. People often used to talk about a mixed marriage. Yeah, like you know, for example, an Englishman marrying a French woman. I survived so far, yeah. But it's a terrible cultural differences. And finally, some of the things which are happening today, the idea of how to reduce conflict, reduce discrimination, or survive discrimination are all continuous questions and with many, many different examples. And here, this is a few years ago, here is one example. This is an event. It's called the Rise of the Black Pound. So it's supposed to be for black people in London. And it says, this event will educate, encourage, and empower black businesses and community-focused individuals to connect the collective benefits of reinvesting the black pound within the black community. And the rise of the black pound. And this is the idea that because British society continues to discriminate, then the best solution, in the opinion of these people, is that black people should spend their money at black shops and buy clothes from companies owned by black people. And this will, in the theory, I don't know if it's true, in the theory, this will help black businesses to have a little more space because of the racism and discrimination. It's more difficult when you're a black business or a black shop and so on, and therefore that this is how it should work. And so, as you can see, so this is a day where shopkeepers and people go along. But you can see something rather amusing about it. I don't know if you have if you have any family who are in business. If you go to a training day, dans une entreprise, vous allez une journée de formation. How much does it cost? €500, something like that. £5. Yeah. So it's an extremely cheap training day. Training is really, really expensive. And this is because the people who organise it are not intending to make money. That's not the problem. It's a political idea. They think it's a good response to discrimination to encourage black people to help black businesses and so on. So this is vaguely connected to a black nationalist perspective, you know, Malcolm X, that sort of perspective. Now, these events are not common. This is rather exceptional. I've only seen two or three. It's not a big movement, but it's one response which exists. Here is another. These last few years, 5 years ago, I think that it began. It's continuing today. This is a political campaign called "Show Racism the Red Card." The red card, of course, in football. And what they did, which was quite interesting, I thought, is they got together and they said, "Well, you know, yes, okay, we want to talk about racism and educate people about racism, but you know, if we go to universities and talk about racism." And we go to these kind of places and talk about racism. Well, you know, it's not the place we have the most problem. However, in the football grounds on a Saturday, in the football crowds, it's well known that among many wonderful things that happen, it's not unusual to see organized racist chanting, and so on. And so they said, well, what we need to do is our anti-racist group will go every Saturday to the football ground and give out information and talk to people and recommend films to people. And we want to be at the football ground talking to football fans because it's more important than talking to university students who are not as bad. So this was a very interesting idea, that a whole campaign, an anti-racist campaign, which concentrates on the football ground because it has been a place where there has been particular events. And indeed it was quite successful because some very well-known football teams agreed to sponsor the thing. So this is the entire football team. Playing that with the "Show Racism the Red Card." This is also partly based on this idea that young white men will be influenced by their football heroes. I don't know if this is true or not, but this is the theory, that it's good to get your football heroes to talk against racism, because, you know, if politicians talk about racism, well, who cares about politicians? If teachers tell you about racism, well, I've heard enough things from teachers. Yeah, there can be a certain resistance to the message. The idea of using music against racism has been revived in the last 10-12 years. I spoke to you a little earlier on about rock against racism. And in 2000, after the year 2000, people began to think, oh yes, we need another music campaign. I said, oh, well, let's do rock against racism again. And then some of the young people said, rock? Remind me what rock is again. Yeah, so rock is no longer the national religion. And so they needed a campaign which included rap and drum and bass and grime and Bhangra and a lot more variety. Yeah, because rock against racism is for your grandparents. Yeah, and so they called it "Love Music, Hate Racism." And there you have it there. And this is the concert from October 2015. Yeah, so it's just a little bit away. Beatboxing and DJ. And you see that in this case, all the proceeds were going to help refugees in Calais. Because there's a lot of refugees in Europe want to live in England, and there are two reasons for this. First of all, sometimes they learnt English at school and not French, and so that's obviously an argument. But the second thing is, remember the situation in England. If you get there, the police never ask you for your identity card because there are no identity cards. So that's obviously an advantage if you're an illegal. There is still, of course, racist right-wing groups, and here you have an example of the British National Party a few years ago, using two slogans there: "Britain is full up," yeah, there's no room, and secondly, "British jobs for British workers." That's the idea. The campaign against the racist parties these days is often very much involved with, helped along by the trade union movement. So Unite is a very big trade union, and there you can see that they've joined the election campaign, Use Your Vote, Stop the Fascist BNP. And this is an interesting poster, because notice they do not tell you who to vote for. They tell you who not to vote for. So this makes it possible to have a united campaign, because if they said vote Labour, then a lot of people disagree. And if they say, oh, vote Green, a lot of people disagree. So they all agree to have a campaign which just says don't vote fascist. Yeah. And so I think that's quite a clever idea, because otherwise, you know, you have so many things you could vote for that you lose the focus here. One of the extreme right groups which has had a little more influence this last 10 years is the English Defence League. And in general, their scapegoats, the people they attack, are Muslims. So, for example, they have smashed the windows from mosques and things like that, you know. And naturally enough, the English Defence League say, we're not racist, because, you know, that's what people say. But in fact, they're fairly small, but they can sometimes have a demonstration of 200, 300 people. There they are again. Yeah, no more masks. If any of the young ladies here are looking for a young gentleman, well, perhaps that's what you... No, I don't think so either. There has been quite a lot of success when the English Defence League have a demonstration of 100 or 200 people. Quite often they find that there are 500 or 1,000 anti-fascists, so sometimes they have to leave in a hurry. There is the Anti-Nazi League no longer exists, but there is a number of anti-racist movements. There you have Searchlight, an anti-fascist magazine. And there you have Stand Up to Racism. Yeah, Stand Up to Racism is a national organization. And there you have a Stand Up to Racism demonstration in November 2018. And I wanted to look at this because there has been... I was telling you that some government representatives have been saying, well, multiculturalism, it's not so great, multiculturalism. We don't want it can divide people. It can make people just stay with their own culture. In 2005, the British government decided, if you want to become British, if you want British nationality, you must pass a test to show that you know British culture. The idea is, the government is saying, we don't want you to get British nationality if you do not accept British culture. Now, this is quite a complicated political initiative. My personal opinion is that the main object is to say to everybody, look, we are worried about the immigrants. The immigrants are a problem. We must make them learn our culture. So I think that, in fact, the test has very little effect, because, of course, somebody who wants nationality, they study, and then they pass the test. It's not a big deal. But it has a political, symbolic meaning that the government is saying to the whole population, immigrants are a problem. We must make them have our culture. And here you have some of the questions which actually exist in the test. In 2005, the British government introduced a citizenship test which most foreigners need to pass if they want to become British. It costs £50 to take the test. That's not too expensive. And of the 748,000 tests taken, 75% succeeded. So this is an interesting... 75% succeeded. And the others took it. It's like, c'est comme le permis. The others took it again 3 months later and succeeded. People who want nationality are normally quite serious about it, and so they pass the test eventually. But the test has been rather criticized because imagine that it's your job to make a test to prove that people have French culture. What questions would you put in it? You know, it's not an easy question, is it? Oh yes, let me check if you have French culture. I don't know. What is it? And so here are some examples of the questions they had, because you need to know stuff, you know. So let's see if you deserve a British nationality. According to vous avez des réponses là, c'est pas bon. J'en ai d'autres où vous avez pas les réponses. According to the census, what proportion of the British population are Christians? And the correct answer is 7 people out of 10. You know, 7 people out of 10 are Christians. Now, as you can imagine, a lot of them are theoretical Christians. They were baptized, yeah. But they're not necessarily. It's not a very religious country. The number of Anglicans who go to church has gone right down. The number of Catholics who go to church is higher. The percentage of and the number of Muslims who go to the mosque is higher. That's right. What percentage of children in Britain live within a step family? Quel est le pourcentage des enfants en Angleterre qui habite dans une famille recomposée, je pense qu'on dirait. Je n'ai pas la moindre idée. Heureusement, c'est écrit en dessous. 10%. 10% of British children live with two parents who are not their biological parents, a step family. Good. Now, all of this is interesting information, but I'm not sure. Does it prove that you are the right sort of person we want to give British nationality? It seems a little strange. What is the population of Wales? $2.9 million. How often does the cabinet normally meet? On va voir si vous méritez d'être français déjà. Quelle est la fréquence des réunions du Conseil des ministres?
Hebdomadaire, une fois par semaine.
Ok. Qui le sait? C'est vrai? Qui le savait? Les autres, vous ne méritez pas d'être français. Désolé, c'est triste, mais vrai. Yeah, as I can say, it's quite easy to criticize. Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. C'est quel jour de la semaine? Voilà. Ah ben c'est demain? Merde, je savais que j'avais un truc demain. Ok. The monarch rules Britain and will reject laws and decisions made by the government if the monarch disagrees with them. Est-ce que c'est vrai ou c'est faux? Est-ce que c'est vrai ou c'est faux? Oui, c'est faux. Oui, c'est faux. On le saura quand même. Hein. Justement. Ok. I have another little example here. Again, we're looking at different reactions to multiculturalism, discrimination, and so on. And this is a campaign. And it says on the bottom who made it. I can't quite see who made it. Including this is the National Union of Teachers. And this is a campaign which is attempting to contradict negative images of immigrants. So these are all people who are immigrants, and you know, on the top left, the gentleman is a firefighter, and on the bottom left, she is a psychologist, etc. Yeah, so it might be a little bit sugary, yeah, but it's saying, you know, look, these immigrants are doing great things in their jobs, yeah. So it's a response to discrimination, and this was the follow-up. Effectivement, en effet, il y avait des gens qui disaient oui, mais votre série d'affiches, qu'est-ce qu'on fait avec les immigrés qui sont ni médecins ni juges? Voilà, because the previous collection here, the emphasis is many immigrants have important jobs as doctors and judges and psychologists. But some anti-racist says Well, yeah, but we don't want people to be racist against immigrants, even if they're not doctors or judges. Or that's why they use this thing, you know, I'm an immigrant, I'm a cleaner. I'm an immigrant, I'm a builder. So this was an anti-racist campaign. Which leaves me just with one additional bit of life in the UK test from 2 years ago. We're just going to do one of these and then I'm going to move on to I'm just going to have time to begin the next topic, which is Ireland. So this is 2 years old, and this is a video which will help you to prepare the test if you want to become British. And it also makes you think, because I understand that it is quite easy to mock these tests. They're easy to mock. Because it's an extremely difficult question. What are the right questions to check that somebody has enough British culture? Let's see.
Question one. Where is the central piece to the Remembrance Day service, known as Cenotaph, located?
Does anybody know? This is the National Monument to the Dead of the First World War. It's called the Cenotaph. Say again? Sorry, I don't understand you. I can't hear you. No. No, in fact, it's extremely unsurprising. The National Monument to the First World War is in London. Which is, it's not surprising. I don't know if it's important, but that's your first question. I'm afraid I don't think we want you as British. I'm sorry, but then I think we probably have other reasons.
Kent, Reading, Berkshire, Whitehall, London, Eastbourne, East Sussex.
The correct answer is
Whitehall, London.
Question two: the UK offers to its residents or citizens freedom of belief and religion, freedom of speech, freedom from unfair discrimination, a right to a fair trial, and a right to join in the election of a government.
Now, this is a very interesting question because quel est le pays qui va dire « Ah, nous, on n'a pas de liberté hein? ». Même les pires des dictatures, ils disent qu'ils ont de la liberté. Alors, ça me semble particulièrement bête comme question. Parce qu'évidemment, ils vont... Mais bien sûr, on sait que c'est une démocratie, donc c'est true, c'est vrai. But it's a bit bizarre, because, you know, it's like, you know, no government, because, you have no freedom in our place. So true or false? I suppose it does show that you have to understand enough English to understand the question. That could be seen.
True. False.
Answer.
This sentence is true.
Question three. Members of the armed forces are allowed to stand for public office in the UK.
What about France? If you're a member of the army, can you stand for election? Good question, isn't it? I don't know either. I'm not sure for Britain. I think the answer is no.
True. False.
Answer.
This statement is false. Most citizens of the UK, the Irish Republic or the Commonwealth, aged 18 or over, can stand for public office, although there are some exceptions, including members of the armed forces, civil servants and people found guilty of certain criminal offences.
There you go. Yeah, I guess it's kind of logical. You wouldn't want a soldier or a major or something standing for one political party. I imagine in France that you have the same problem. You know the idea, because the idea is that the army are supposed to be politically neutral. They may or may not be, and so campaigning with. If the members of the armed forces were allowed to stand for election in Britain, you could have one party saying, our candidate is a hero from the war in Iraq. And it would all become very very mixed up, I think, politically, yes.
Question four. Which of the following cities is known as the home of golf?
Salisbury.
Anybody?
St. Andrews. North.
The home of golf?
The correct answer is...
Yes.
St. Andrews.
St. Andrews.
Scotland.
Yes.
Question five. How old Do you have to be to apply for a free TV license?
65, 75, 70, 60.
The correct answer is
75 or over.
Yeah, ok. On n'est pas obligé de payer son redevance si on a plus de 75 ans. Now, this is very interesting, but again, it makes you wonder, you know, say, oh yeah, you're a good immigrant because you knew that, you're a bad immigrant because you didn't know that. It doesn't seem logical to me.
Question 6. Dane Kelly Holmes won 2 gold medals for running in which Olympic
Games? 2004.
Come on. Yeah?
2008,
2012. The correct answer is
2004. Question
7.
When did the First World War come to an end?
11th of November 1916.
Ah, si, quand même. Vous savez que c'était fini?
13th of November 1916.
The correct answer is? The 11th of November 1918.
Question 8. Which two of the following are the roles of the NATO?
Members should help each other if they come under attack. Maintain peace between all its members. Prevent war